that matter, you mean. And when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, we're living now and we're all in this place. So be sure to smile.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, your community internet radio station broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. I'm Fanny Crawford, your co-host.
And I'm Stacy Olkowski.
And we are glad you're joining us today. Our theme today is bad choices, bad decisions. But before we tell you some of those bad decision stories, we want to update you on what we've been up to this past week. Yes?
Go ahead. I was going to say.
I'm trying to think if I made any bad decisions this week.
I made a storytelling decision this week about, I was supposed to go to back to an elementary school that I did a performance, three performances earlier in this year.
In Sharpsburg?
In Boonesboro.
Boonesboro,
actually.
Okay.
And, but I'm on Thursday, I called the principal and spoke to her and told her that I thought she should not look for a date between now and the end of the year, because she had been looking for a date for me to do the kindergarten, first and second grades. But I informed her about some things that are going on in my personal life, some surgeries that are coming up and have actually started, and told her that maybe she should postpone that and put me on the schedule for the fall, because I have
you have a lot going on.
I have a number of things to fix me. I'll be a better robot by the fall.
Well, you'll be able to take care of yourself much more.
I won't have to
conveniently
think for
without,
a while.
Yeah, having to worry about elementary school students for
right.
a bit. Well, today's May 7th. Listeners, in case you were wondering what the heck a day it is, because I'm wondering what the heck a day it is. and it is Monday. And I'm trying to remember what I did this weekend. And it's all gone by in a blur.
There you go. That fits in with me, too, because I'm putting in seven eye drops in my eye that I had surgery on Friday. And I have to continue doing that until the doctor says I can stop with one of them, and then I do six eye drops for 30 days.
But you can see so much better.
My vision has improved.
From one eye.
Yes.
Okay.
My vision has improved.
Well, my big event for the weekend was the Unitarian auction at Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown, which is an annual event there. And we have an auctioneer who comes all the way from Philadelphia.
Wow.
Although I think he was trained elsewhere as an auctioneer, but he's the funniest auctioneer I have ever heard. And we did really well. And one of the things I had it's called a service auction, because it's known for church members putting in services, saying you'll mow somebody's lawn or do sewing for people. And in my case, every year I've done something around storytelling. So this year I'm doing story coaching, and three people took me up on that offer. So I made a little money for the church, but I'm also going to get to hear other people's stories. And the culmination of that process for each of those people is that they have their choice of telling stories on the air here with us at Enlighten Storytelling Hour. Now, you did say yes to that, Stash. You don't remember that?
I
looked startled.
I think I forgot about the auction. I would have donated something.
Ah. Next, there'll be another one.
I will.
Next year. Or the people I'm coaching could opt to tell a 5, 10, or 15-minute story at Stories in the Round as the opening act for one of our national tellers.
Right, that
so
sounds good.
We're waiting
that sounds very good.
To see how
that's
that
nice.
Goes. Good. I'm glad you approve.
Sounds pretty good. Of course. I'm a rubber stamp, whatever you want to do.
Hardly.
Well.
We have some lovely conversations.
Okay.
That are not at all rubber stamp conversations in the car on the way here and the way home.
Okay. I don't think this is a proper place for laundry.
It's not laundry. It's fun.
Okay.
It's the richness of our friendship.
Yes.
Stash Zilkowski.
Okay.
That might have been, okay, we're moving on to other people's poor decisions.
There you go.
Poor choices.
So, shall I begin?
Please do.
Okay. I have a story. This is a personal story. It's very close to my heart and other body parts.
Yikes!
This story has a title. I can trim those high branches myself. In the early 90s, or the mid-90s, I lived on a property that had a double house. And on one side, on the left double, an elderly woman lived. And there was a tree right next to the porch of that house that had some branches that looked dangerously fragile, as if they could fall at any time. And I inquired into a tree trimming service, and I was given a quote of $1,000 to trim some of those branches. And that seemed like an incredible amount of money when I was physically able to do lots of things myself. And I had done some tree work on a different property. So I had a nephew who was willing to help me. I had a 40-foot extension ladder, a chainsaw, a safety belt, and we did a trial run with the ladder and set it up, and it was just a tad too short.
Uh-oh. We
had to have a pretty good angle on 40-foot extension ladder, and so getting up to the top where it was, where I would be able to reach the branches comfortably, was a little bit short. So, having lots of confidence and my background in science, and I had done lots of different construction work, I got an 8-foot section of an aluminum ladder, and I built a couple of hooks on the bottom rung, and those hooks could sit near the top of the 40-foot extension ladder and would extend the distance at least 5.5 feet, which would be plenty for me to reach up and trim. In order to make sure there was no danger, not only were there two hooks that set down onto the rungs of the big ladder, I had a very strong rope tied through the two side pieces of the little ladder, the 8-foot ladder, and around the tree, tied with a very strong knot, so that ladder was not only hooked to the 40-foot ladder, it was also tied to the tree at the top. Well, we spent a very good morning. The chainsaw, I went up to the tree with a rope, threw it over one of the limbs I wasn't going to cut, lowered the rope down to my nephew, and he hooked the chainsaw to it. That choice would have been considered a really bad choice if anything had happened with the chainsaw. But nothing happened that was terrible with the chainsaw. But I was able to pull up the chainsaw, get it started, and I began trimming. And trying to be smart, I started higher rather than lower. So I was at the highest point I would be on the ladder for the whole job. And I spent a couple of hours trimming the branches, and I had to be very careful so I didn't trim any so that they would fall onto the house or onto the porch or onto my nephew. And finally, he called up and said, he called me Unc. Hey, Unc, I think it's time for lunch. You need to take a break, and I'm getting tired of looking up at you. I imagine his neck was getting tired of staring up into the tree. Well, with that, I turned off the chainsaw, lowered it down to him, and I turned. And at that point, I'm not sure exactly what happened. I know I didn't untie the rope holding the 8-foot ladder. However, I had one hand on the top of that ladder and was about to step down onto the extension ladder when I felt movement. And maybe at that second, or maybe just later, being able to reflect on it, I realized that I was leaning backwards because the ladder, the rope had come loose. And I was acting kind of like the ladder was leaning back and I was beginning to fall. I wish I could say that I made a conscious effort at this point, but really I think it was just some kind of mammalian reflex. I was definitely falling. There was no way I could stop myself. And somehow I realized that because the ladder, the extension ladder, was set a good distance away from the base of the tree, I was going to land on the ladder unless I could push myself backwards. Now, I don't ever remember thinking those thoughts, but I must have had some kind of reaction to that. I pushed as hard as I could with my feet and went backwards into space. The short piece of ladder that had come unhooked from the tree followed me, and I didn't push hard enough. I fell a good distance. I could hear my nephew sort of as almost like background music or excitement or something. I think he was yelling. I heard the sound of his voice, and I wound up hitting the ladder down about 8 feet from the bottom with my right knee and with my face. And then I was in my nephew's arms, and we were both on the ground. Luckily, he had decided to stay under there and catch me. And to this day, I'm grateful for that, because if he hadn't, the ladder, the base of the ladder, was sitting on a flat rock about 6 feet across both directions. And that's where I would have landed after hitting the bottom of the ladder. Anyway, as we lay on the ground, the first thing he said to me was, "Are you okay?" I said, "My face feels funny." And he then said, "Unc, I don't think they're going to let us play this anymore." No one else was home. He propped me up against the base of the ladder and ran to get to make a phone call. He called 911, called for an ambulance. I told him I didn't think it was necessary. He just ignored me, of course. And then he came and knelt by me. He offered me his handkerchief, which was clean, was nice. And I realized after I used his handkerchief to wipe the moisture from my face, that I indeed had done something to my face. There was a lot of blood on his handkerchief. Well, the result was that an ambulance came in just a few minutes. Luckily, the house wasn't very far from the Reisterstown Fire Department, and they were able to take me to a hospital in Randallstown. And in the hospital, it was determined that I had done some damage to my right knee, and the doctor had given me some a sedative of some kind to calm me down, and told me that he needed me, once I was able to stand and be with some help, he needed me to shave between my lower lip and my chin, because I had somehow split my face there. And he said he would rather have me do the shaving than have him, because I was numb, and he wasn't sure that he could trust his hands through all the hair on my face. My beard is pretty thick, and was then. So I spent 2 days in the hospital, and 4 months later had surgery on my knee. Luckily, he did a great job of stitching the damage to my face. And also, since I wear a beard all the time, no one ever sees whether I have a scar there or not. So the bad decision was a series. I should have paid the man to trim the tree because it wasn't finished. And I should not have tied an extra piece of ladder to the extension ladder. And if I was going to tie it, I should have had someone who knew knots, good knots, like a Boy Scout, which I wasn't, to make sure that they wouldn't come loose. And that's the story of, I can trim those high branches myself. Not.
That is quite a story, Stosh. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Well, I have a whole list of questions here.
All right.
My gosh. First of all, did your life flash before your eyes as you fell?
Oh, you know, it didn't. However, for quite a while, I had, I guess what you could call flashbacks. I might be doing something and I would lean a certain way or move a certain way, and I would, the image of the tree receding as I fell backwards came strongly into my mind, and I would actually feel as if I was falling again.
Muscle memory.
And yes, and that was pretty frightening.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That was more frightening than the actual fall, because in the actual fall I was so excited, and when I hit the ladder, I guess I was in shock or something, because I didn't feel any pain in my face, and I didn't feel any pain in my knee, and I even told the ambulance guys I thought I was fine and didn't need to go to the hospital. And as they probably do on 99% of their cases, they kind of smiled and said, well, we'll take you anyway.
smart guys.
Right.
So it did that. Well, first of all, why did they wait 4 months to operate on your knee?
Well, because at first it was just sore. And they didn't think there was any damage.
They did an x-ray?
They did an x-ray, and they didn't see anything that looked bad. It wasn't any bone break or anything, but it turned out that I had done something to the meniscus. And over the next couple of months, anytime I had to kneel, that knee burned like someone put a hot iron on it. And and I was teaching at an elementary school at the time, and with teaching, you know, first, second, third graders, the fourth, fifth, and sixth graders, I didn't do that much on the floor. But with the little kids, I would be kneeling down to And so I went to the doctors, and they looked at it again, examined it, and they suggested that they could cut the knee open and take something out that was a problem in there, and then I wouldn't have any more problem. And so I did that. And I did get one benefit from it. I was out of school for 3 weeks, recovery, and got to watch lots and lots and lots of movies that I could rent from the video store that I normally would not have watched. So,
but you missed the children.
Oh, I did miss the children. but I was able to get my daughter, who was a recent college graduate, to take my place as a substitute.
Wow.
And she used my lesson plans.
You are a fixer.
Yeah. She used my lesson plans, and she did a great job, and got her hooked on teaching.
What year was this?
This happened in 1994. My surgery was in 1995, My leg's been fine ever since.
All right, I have one more question, but I'm going to do a station identification first. Because we want you to know that you're listening to the Enlightened Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stash Ziolkowski.
And Stash has just been telling us a story called I Can Trim Those Branches on That Tree. Did I get that right?
Yes. High branches.
High branches right. On that tree, and how that that incident became a scary, bad decision.
Yes. And what's your other question?
My other question is, did this terrifying accident change any relationships with any family members?
Oh.
You don't have to share that if that's not something for public consumption, but that's where I go to, is how I would feel if somebody in my family fell out of a tree.
I remember one comment was that, well, I wish you had finished before you did that. and I won't say who said that, but anyway, it just added to what would I say, to my legend.
Yeah,
I've been in all my life, I've been famous for having strange things happen to me, and just using them as a story because it became interesting, and it didn't really affect, in the long run, it didn't really affect my abilities to do other things. I was still able to walk okay and stuff, and in fact, that summer I had a very good role in a musical where I had to do lots of dancing. So I was glad that the surgery worked so well.
How about with your nephew?
We were very close for a long time. He was pretty much my favorite nephew. We don't see each other very much anymore. Over the years, I had moved out of state and traveled quite a bit and
gone to
a number of different states. And but we have recently seen each other since now I'm back in the Baltimore area, kind of, only 75 miles away. And
he fell on his ladder for you.
Yeah.
Or fell on your ladder
for
you.
He fell on the ladder. Yes.
I thought
what he did
was
a very brave thing.
Yes.
It really was. And because he liked me.
As strange as that sounds, you know, I will accept that.
So I think it would be a appropriate time for you to mention stories in the round.
Oh, good idea. We've just been talking about Kevin Cordy, who is our Stories in the Round performer, our storyteller for the month of May, May 28th. Kevin Cordy's coming from Ohio to our usual venue, the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown at 13245 Searfoss Pike. That's Salem Avenue Extended, if you know Hagerstown at all. And 7 p.m. on Monday, May 28th. And I'm really, really looking forward.
I
haven't even met Kevin yet. So I've heard him tell a bit online, and I have words from people I trust implicitly that he's
sure
going to
love
be
him.
Quite wonderful.
Yes.
And I've had multiple conversations with him. So I'm really looking forward to his being there. If you're interested, if our listeners are interested in the Stories in the Round series, this is session 3 of a 10-session series for season 5, March through December. You can call me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638. Or you can email me at Fanitsky, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y, at hotmail.com. But I also want our listeners to know that if we have teachers in the audience, I'm sure we do, librarians in the audience, performers of all types, and people who just want to tell their side of things, Kevin's going to be doing a workshop for us at my house the day before on May 27th. And we still have spaces. So I'm hoping that people will call me at 301-730-1638 or email me at finitsky@hotmail.com. That's 12 to 5 on Sunday, May 27th. And if you're not on the email list for Stories in the Round, you might want to call me just on that account because we have other wonderful tellers coming up. But we are close to the halfway mark. Oh. And I want, well, I'll mention Andy Offit Irwin for the month of June. That's June 18th that Andy will be here for Stories in the Round. And then in July, we have Magid Melvin Medelitz, an ordained storytelling rabbi who will be telling sacred tales. And I can personally vouch for both of those gentlemen. But let's go back to storytelling.
Yes. You have a story.
It's my turn. I was just about to ask you if you had another story.
I have another story, but it's your
turn. I will do my story. So this, our theme today, as we said earlier, is bad choices, bad decisions. And I'm going to tell a classic story in the original format. This is Alfred Noyes, The Highwayman. And of course, The Highwayman's a very famous poem, first published in Blackwood's magazine in Scotland. And then the following year, which would have been 1907, in Alfred Noyes' first book of poetry, 40 Singing Seamen and Other Poems. And I have this burning desire to go and read the rest of that volume and find out about the 40 Singing Seamen.
But, sounds good.
Yeah. So this is an old poem. It's more than 100 years back that it was written, but it was set 200 years before that in early 18th century England, windswept, lonely country called Bagshot Heath. And Alfred Noyes was just in his early 20s when he wrote this poem. He was sitting in a cottage that he rented on that heath, and listening to the sound of the wind in the pines. And that's where the first line of this poem comes from. And Alfred Noyes himself said, when this poem became so wildly successful with the public, that it was because he was at an age that he was, quote, genuinely excited by this kind of romantic story. He was a romantic. So I'm going to skip the notes on vocabulary that I often do when I tell this story to people. But Stosh, if you think anybody's going to have difficulty with these words, you should let me know. The Highwayman. The wind was a torrent of darkness among the gusty trees. The moon was a ghostly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas. The road was a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moor, when the highwayman came riding, 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 the highwayman came riding up to the old inn door. He'd a French cocked hat on his forehead and a clutch of lace at his chin, a coat of claret, velvet, and breeches of brown doeskin. They fitted with never a wrinkle, his boots almost to the thigh, with pistols glittering at either hip, glittering, glittering, his rapier hilt a-glittering under the jeweled sky. Over the cobbles he clattered and clashed in the dark inn yard. He tapped with his whip on the shutters, but all was locked and barred. He whistled a tune to the window, and who should be waiting there but the landlord's black-eyed daughter, Bess, the landlord's daughter, plaiting a dark red love knot into her long black hair. One kiss, my bonny sweetheart, I'm after a prize tonight, but I shall be back with the yellow gold before the morning light. Yet if they press me sharply and harry me through the day, then look for me by moonlight. Watch for me by moonlight. I'll come to thee by moonlight, though hell should bar the way. He rose upright in the stirrups and reached to take her hand, but she loosened her hair in the casement. His face burned like a brand as the black cascade of perfume came tumbling o'er his breast, and he kissed its waves in the moonlight, sweet black waves in the moonlight. And then he tugged at his rein in the moonlight and galloped away to the west. He did not come at the dawning. He did not come at noon. But out of the tawny sunset, before the rise of the moon, when the road was a gypsy's ribbon, looping the purple moor, a red coat troop came marching, 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 King George's men came marching up to the old inn door. They said no word to the landlord. They drank his ale instead, but they gagged his daughter and bound her to the foot of her narrow bed. Two of them knelt at her casement with muskets at their side, death at every window, and hell at one dark window, for Bess could see through the casement the road that he would ride. They tied the landlord's daughter with many a sniggering jest. They bound a musket beside her with the barrel beneath her breast. Now keep good watch! And they kissed her. She heard the doomed man say, look for me by moonlight. I'll come to thee by moonlight, though hell should bar the way. Cold on the stroke of midnight, the tip of one finger stirred. Cold under the moonlight, the trigger at least was hers. She would not risk their hearing, no need to strive for the rest. The road lay bare in the moonlight. The road lay bare, bright in the moonlight, and the musket beneath her breast. Look for me by moonlight, hoofbeats ringing clear, clip-clop, clip-clop, on the highway. Were they deaf that they did not hear? Down the ribbon of moonlight, over the brow of the hill, the highwaymen came riding, riding, riding. The red coats looked to their priming. Bess stood straight and still. Clip-clop on the gypsy highway, clip-clop in the echoing night. Nearer he came and nearer, her face like a beacon light. Her eyes grew wide for a moment. She drew one last deep breath. Then her finger moved in the moonlight. Her musket shattered the moonlight, shattered her breast in the moonlight, and warned him with her death. He turned, he spurred back to the west. He did not know who stood, bowed with her dark hair hanging, drenched with her own red blood. Not till the dawn had he heard it. His face grew gray to hear how Bess, the landlord's daughter, the landlord's black-eyed daughter, had watched for her love in the moonlight and died in the darkness there. Back he spurred like a madman, shrieking a curse to the sky, with the white road smoking behind him and his rapier brandished high. Blood red were his spurs in the golden noon. Wine red was his velvet coat when they shot him down on the highway, down like a dog on the highway. And he lay in his blood on the highway, with a clutch of lace at his throat. And still, of a winter's night, they say, when the wind is in the trees, when the moon is a ghostly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas, when the road is a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moor, a highwayman comes riding, 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 a highwayman comes riding up to the old inn door. Over the cobbles he clatters and clangs in the darkened yard. He taps with his whip on the shutters, but all is locked and barred. He whistles a tune to the window, and who should be waiting there but the landlord's black-eyed daughter, Bess, the landlord's daughter, plaiting a dark red love knot into her long black hair.
Wow.
That poem makes me cry every time I read it.
Excellent. It's such beautiful writing. And what a challenge. I said before, I once wanted to try to do that on stage by memory, but when I thought about doing it, I was at the age where I couldn't trust my memory.
Well, it is easier to tell that story if you know Phil Oakes's version put to music. So you're going to have to look that up.
Maybe it'll be on YouTube.
It is on YouTube.
Oh, good. Then I'll do that.
Yeah, both the lyrics and the music and Phil singing, but many, many other people have covered it since he's been gone. And I think it actually rivals the original. That was mostly the original with a couple stanzas left out. But
that was wonderful. I enjoyed the reading very much, the telling very much.
Well, we still have to talk about what the bad decisions were in that story. You had an interesting take earlier, but I won't say it for you.
Oh, it's okay.
But I think that the bad decision was simply to become an outlaw, to become a highwayman. But of course, the highwaymen in that period in time didn't have a lot of choices.
No.
Or that's what I've been told.
Yes. And, I think men often throughout history have made poor choices when it comes to, people say their heart. You know, it's not really the heart. It's your mind. when some man gazes, I'll speak for myself, when you gaze at a beautiful woman as a young man and, you're smitten, there's nothing in your chest that's telling you you're smitten. It's in your mind. And that causes all kind of reactions. And I think very often men throughout history, thousands of men, hundreds of thousands of men have made bad decisions because of that feeling.
But that's not what the poem says.
No.
He didn't die because he was courting the landlord's daughter. He died because he went for the yellow gold.
But then he went back.
He did go back.
He went back. His anger.
They would have. I see. I see what you're saying.
He lost his love.
I think that was not necessarily his worst decision, though.
He lost his job. He lost his gold.
We definitely have a different view of at least romantic reality.
Oh, no, I understand it. I understand it. I could write a few sonnets myself about those kind of decisions. Men often make decisions based on that feeling.
He went back. He went back. Okay. I'm going to ponder that.
Right. My father used to say, wait for a day. if you're really that, it will still be there in a day. And if it's not, then I will be giving you good advice.
He had been coming to see her for some time.
I know.
Okay. We may just need to agree to disagree.
I understand it. And who knows? I might have done the same thing. However, I would not have gone back. I would have mourned her and moved on to the next locale.
I don't know about that. This is a man who has lots of stories about fixing things.
Well, he didn't have much chance of fixing that.
He did fix it in one way or another. And yes. Well, anyway.
in some ways, people would say, well, maybe he joined her, though. I'm not sure I want to take her.
And they're riding together bloody over the hills on a ghost horse.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So, this is Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. Come to you from Bolivar, West Virginia. And I think now I could do a little bit of speak story update.
I think you should because it's tomorrow
evening. Tomorrow, Robert Kikuchi Ngojo, a marvelous storyteller, one of the founders of Ethnotech, an Asian group that tells stories, plays music, and does wonderful performances. Robert is going to do a program between Shadow and Light, Asian Tales of Wisdom and Woe. And we just heard an English tale of wisdom and woe.
Indeed, indeed, indeed.
Okay. And that's tomorrow, May 8th. And for people who are interested in the storytelling series in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, tomorrow is still, there's an opportunity to purchase the season pass, season ticket, which saves you some money on the series. And the series has been extended into December because Elizabeth Ellis's performance was snowed out.
Snowed out.
But she is coming back in December to do the performance that was taken away from us.
I'm so glad.
I am too. I like Elizabeth. June 12th, Scott White here from Chicago. And he's going to tell personal stories.
The Next Generation.
Yes. That's interesting that the Next Generation is, I won't even mention his age, but we need some young storytellers out there. Start telling stories. July 10th, Dovey Thomason, How the West Was Spun. Dovey is a Native American, legendary in her own right, and travels the country telling stories about the Native Americans of this country. August 14th, Corrine Stavish will be doing a program about the people in Denmark during World War II. And the program is titled, When Good People Do Something. Many Jewish people were saved because of the good works that the people in Denmark did. September 11th, Donald Davis. Donald is one of the premier storytellers in the country and in great demand. He never has to worry about getting a job. There are many of them lined up for him years in advance.
You might want to get to that session early, by the way.
Yes, that session will probably be packed. October 9th, Linda Gorham tells twisted and unconventional. Yes, speaking of twisted.
Well, that sounds like impossible.
Right. Unconventional humor and twisted fairy tales. And Megan Wells, November 13th, Old Tales, Classic Literature, and Megan is spellbinding. We saw her last year at Jonesboro. We've seen a number of these people at Jonesboro.
All of this lineup is a wonderful season. And
this is going to be a kind of sad day, a year for me. I'm going to miss Andy in June because of my surgeries. And also, I'm going to not go to Jonesboro this year because of surgery.
Oh,
I hope
the world will be a duller place, I do have to say.
I hope that all this stuff works really well so that next year I don't have to miss anything. And then in December, Elizabeth Ellis will be back. And that date is December 11th
for Elizabeth. I'm going to put that on my calendar. I don't even think I have that date on my calendar.
I think it was just posted. And it may not be.
I think you announced it last last week as well, but I don't know that I wrote it down.
Well,
December
11th. You know, at my age, who knows what happened last week? I shouldn't say that. So that's the Speak Story series in Shepherdstown, West Virginia.
Did you give our listeners the website?
www.speakstoryseries.com.
I should have known you would.
Yes. And it's interesting that nowadays you don't even have to use the www, which is kind of interesting to me. It's like no longer calling someone Mr., which they don't do. Nowadays you see letters that are sent to people. It just says Joe Schmush.
Mr. World Wide Web.
Right. So, anyway, we have time for more stories. Would you like to hear one?
Yes, I would.
Okay. This one, yours was kind of serious, which is okay. You know, I like serious. But this one's also, this is an excerpt. This is a story that I have used as a monologue in theater. I want to share this because it has to do with a bad decision. And this was written by William Handley, Handley. And this small story comes in a novel, which is titled Slow Dance on the Killing Fields. I had a wife who was a Jew, and a son who was a Jew for his mother's sake. 10 years old he was in 1938. To be married to a Jew in Germany in 1938, a man might as well have been a Jew himself. The Nazis made no distinctions. And of course, to have been a Jew then was to wait for the day when they opened your door and took you away. They opened so many doors. So many doors, and came out with Jews in their fists. Most men, you know, most men can live all their lives with the conviction that they have honor, and they can go to their graves with that conviction without ever having been put to the test of it. I envy them, the ones who escaped the test. Not me. In December of 1938, I had my tests, my choice to make. To wait until I was taken to a concentration camp as a Jew with my Jewish wife and my Jewish son, or to live as a communist and fight for my country, my Germany, against the Nazis. Sure, you can say, where's the choice there? Where's the choice to make against loyalty to your wife and to your son? Easy to say. Even for me, easy to say now, but not then. Because, you see, the party, belief in the party was above all. Of course, this is impossible to believe, I know, for anyone who is not of it. But it was true. The party was God. The defeat of Nazism, our paradise to be attained on earth, our German earth. And to save my life for that fight, I abandoned them, my wife and my child. In the middle of the night, without a word, I went to another city. I took another name. I was a railroad engineer in those days, and the war was coming, and the trains were rolling day and night in Germany then. Day and night for nearly a year, I carried freight between Hamburg and Cologne, chemicals, machinery, armaments. From time to time, I would get news of home from comrades that my wife and son were well, were safe yet. And then I was transferred to another run, to a place called Mauthausen. And the freight was people. 3 trips I made in 2 months, and I carried hundreds and hundreds of people, Jews, to the concentration camp at Mauthausen. Until August of 1939, and Stalin made his pact with Hitler. Communism embraced Nazism. My God kissed Satan and called him friend. In that moment, there was a new truth. that I had abandoned my wife and my son to the wolves and saved myself for nothing. For nothing. My life without them had been without meaning. Their death without me, when it came, would be equally without meaning. Unless it was not too late. Of course, I could go back. With what dignity and honor there was left in me, I could go back to my wife. Whether she would forgive me or not, whether she would have me or not, I could live with her again and with my son, as the husband of a Jew and the father of a Jew, and wait for them to open our door and take us together. And I went back. And in the house, the windows were smashed, and the door was open, and they were gone. I left Germany then. Say what you can. I know. I know.
Oh.
Isn't that powerful?
It's very powerful. That must be some book.
It is. It's a, and that used as a monologue, I was able to get two very nice roles in the theater because of the power of those words.
As auditions. Yeah.
I used that. I would only use it if I needed to have someone think of me as a serious candidate for a serious role.
It is serious, that's yes. For sure.
Yes. And a powerful message that sometimes bad choices are made for what seems like a good reason at the time.
Mm-hmm. Is Slow Dance on the Killing Fields, is that a novel?
Or it is a novel.
Short stories? Okay.
It is a novel. Right. And this story comes at a point in the novel where this elderly man is in a store and talking to a clerk. Mm-hmm. And this comes up, and he tells him this story.
And the author's William Handley?
William Handley, yes.
Well, I'm going to have to check out the book. Or just get you to tell it to me at some point. Well, so we've had some... We've had a story that was, could have been a tragedy, as it was recoverable.
Yes, right.
An accident from which you recovered. And then we had a romantic tragedy.
Right.
And then reality.
Right.
Political tragedy that actually happened, even though... Right. That's from a novel.
So, would you like to hear an upbeat story? A short? Maybe we should bring it up a little bit. A story about a good choice that goes against the theme, but but it would be happier.
Okay.
Okay. So, one of my favorite theater pieces to perform in is Camelot. And I have directed the show, and I have been in the show a couple of times in different theaters. And the role that I love in that show is King Pellinore, a kind of an older knight who travels around looking for a terrible beast. And he's a bit dotty, but also charming and lovable. And in 1995, I had a chance to audition for that show in Westminster at the college at McDaniel University. And I was just ready to go up on stage when I changed my mind and gave the paperwork back to the person who had called me. It was my turn to audition, and left. And drove to Frederick, Maryland to an audition for My Fair Lady. And that was a great decision because I got the part of Alfred Doolittle in My Fair Lady, and I met My Fair Lady. I met my wife, Terry, at that audition. And coming up in August will be our 20th wedding anniversary. And it was the best decision I ever made in my life.
Oh.
And that's the truth.
That's a great story. Oh, that is a nice note.
Yes.
For I our final story. Well, I had a short little bit, but ooh. No, it will work for other okay. themes as well. So you'll get to right. hear it eventually. And you may already have heard it, actually, but we'll save it. But we did want to mention that we're hoping to have Kevin Cordy on air with us next.
Not next
no,
week.
No, the week after. The 28th.
Three weeks. 3 weeks from today.
Okay. So.
Yes.
I just have to be patient, I yes. guess.
I'm really looking forward to Kevin coming because he's going to stay at my house.
Yeah.
And he's been a guest in my home before. And he and I both, the last time he was a guest in our house, we spent lots of hours talking about storytelling and sharing all kinds of things. He's very open. He loves to talk about storytelling and about things that that he's working on.
Mm-hmm.
And he is one of the most positive, upbeat people I have ever met. And he's done lots of wonderful programs in storytelling with young people. And I met him through the Storybox Project when I was mm-hmm. in Arkansas through emails and things. And I'm looking forward to seeing him in person.
And as far as we know, this is his first time in Hagerstown when he comes on the 28th.
I don't think he's ever been here before.
All right. And that's part of the Stories in the Round series in Hagerstown. And you can get more information about Kevin Cordy or about the series in general by calling me, Fanny Crawford, 301-730-1638, or email me at fenitsky@hotmail.com. Listeners, if you missed the very first part of the program or the first 20 minutes of the program, maybe it was more than that.
Right.
You heard about Stories in the Round. And if you did miss any other program or any other program, you can also go to our podcasts at talltales.enlightenradio.org and listen to almost two whole years of past programming. Who's going to close this out, Stosh?
I will.
Thank you.
Okay. This is Stosh Jolkowski and
Fanny Crawford,
your co-host for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. Closing out this week's show, the Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned for jazz.
See you next Monday at 12 noon, or maybe on a podcast before
yes.
that. Have a good week.